That's the Carol Beth Trio, or the Carol Beth True Trio, also currently known as Two Times True. A little bit of a misnomer in the case of that particular performance. Two Times True, referring to Carol Beth, of course, herself on piano, and her son David, who was the drummer for the current trio. There was a different drummer on that particular track, which was called Day In, Day Out. Bassist for both the current trio and that one, Glenn Smith. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. We're your connection to local performances, and Carol Beth Trio, or Two Times True, will be performing tonight at 7:30 as the second concert on the third annual Engelbach Heart Music Festival, which actually began last night with a recital by the Illinois College Music Faculty, which is where it takes place, Illinois College in Jacksonville, Illinois. And I'll be talking with Carol Beth True in just a moment. Later on the program, I'll be talking with blues guitarist and singer Duke Robillard, who is of a very high international reputation. He's won multiple Blues Music Awards, formerly known as the W.C. Handy Awards. And he will be with his quartet at the Cowboy Monkey in Champaign tomorrow night for a late show at 9:30. But first, Carol Beth True, who hails from St. Louis, and she's played a number of times in Jacksonville over the years. And first, welcome to the show, and what's your affiliation with Jacksonville?
Well, most of what I've done up there has been classical work with Garrett Allman, the fine conductor of the Illinois of the Jacksonville Symphony. I met Garrett, I think, through a wonderful couple, now long retired from the St. Louis Symphony. Bob Coleman was the assistant principal clarinet, and Jan, his wife, was assistant principal flute. And we met in the, I guess, mid-80s, kind of our lives came together at that point. I think we had met, and they were real close friends with Garrett at that time, and so I think I met him through them, and we did performances actually with them up there, but more than anything else, and we were up there also with the big band that Bob Coleman formed. He called it Legacy Big Band, and it was literally the honest-to-goodness music of the 40s, the real arrangements of the Glenn Miller, Tommy Dorsey, et cetera, years, Artie Shaw, et cetera. And we were up there a number of times with that group. But through the years, I've done, I guess, maybe four or five or six concertos with Garrett, where I was the piano soloist. So those have been wonderful thrills for me because my area is primarily the jazz and pop music.
Well, that was actually going to be my question. I mean, I know that that you do sort of straddle the fence between classical and jazz, and you teach both.
Right, I do that.
Piano,
yes.
but mostly you consider yourself a jazz pianist?
Oh, yes, yeah. I mean, the classical, I never figured I would play an orchestral piece again after I left college. So this all kind of came out of the blue, and it started here in St. Louis, actually. My first one was with the Webster Symphony, and of all pieces, the Cacciatorian Piano Concerto, which is sort of starting at the top. But I managed to survive that one and got asked to do some more. So I've played with a number of the orchestras here. I haven't been soloist with the St. Louis, nor will I ever be. I've done a lot of adjunct work with them, but, I mean, not featured. But and I did some out-of-town things, but mostly in Jacksonville with Gary. And it's been a thrill. I mean, those pieces are mountains for me because I don't do them regularly. So I think that phase of my career is over, but it's been a lot of fun, and it's always been great working with the symphony there in Jacksonville. People just treat you wonderfully, and it's a good group. I mean, it's a very fine group of players.
Did those concerto opportunities come up? Were they well after your college years?
Yeah, I guess I would say a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because most of the concerto work has been in the last 15, 20 years. So
you really sort of had to... Well, did you, though, have to work up your chops again? Because I've talked to various pianists, jazz pianists, who say that many jazz pianists over the years have been classically trained.
Oh, definitely. I think a large part of them. And so, no, it wasn't really a case of that. It was more just learning these pieces. And there are some of them I actually did without the score. I actually did from memory, which isn't usually necessary, but I managed to do it. I look back on it now, and I did the Ravel G major that way with the Washington University Symphony, and I still don't know how I did that. But anyway, it was just a case of learning these things. I mean, I knew what it took to do that sort of thing. I just never figured I'd do it because my life had been pretty much this other kind of music here and some other things, too, in St. Louis, in addition to teaching. So it was a thrill when I was asked to do the first one. Alan Larson was the conductor then, just recently retired from the Webster Symphony. And so that was my first one, and then a lot more sprang up after that. So it was good.
So tell me about your jazz life in St. Louis. You have your trio, which has had various slightly varying members over the years, and then you play with a number of other groups currently and I guess in the past?
Well, whenever we can. The jazz picture is not particularly good here in St. Louis. I have to be honest about it. It's been a lot better in the past, and I think that's true everywhere, but there are still those people who really love the music, and I think, and we're turning out so many wonderful young talents. So many of my students are... former students are in New York, or they're touring internationally, and it's pretty amazing. So you just have to feel that this will continue. It may take a different road or track, but it's this kind of music that's improvised, which is our own creation in America. I mean, this is America's only original art form, as we say, and you just have to believe that it's going to continue and have life long after many of us are gone. So I play the group that has come together in this last since 07 is Two Times True. It actually involves a wonderful saxophone player, Larry Johnson, and it was actually the brainchild of our CD producer, of several that we had done earlier in this first part of the century. He wanted to record my son and myself together. He had heard David play, and David had been back in St. Louis a couple of years since getting a music business degree at DePaul in Chicago. And he knew David was a good player. David also began working for Commerce Bank, which he is still doing as of today. But he is a really fine drummer, and people love working with him. So it just sort of came together through the wonderful Bill Becker, who is the president of Victoria Label here in St. Louis. And we just have gone from there. We've played many of the festivals here. We've played some clubs. It's like I say, the picture is rather skimpy right now, but we just finished a weekend at Jazz at the Bistro, which is the jazz club in St. Louis. It's where the legends, the stars, and it's wonderful. So, and we had a very successful weekend, and Garrett Allman was kind enough to come down and spend the whole Saturday night with us there, so he got to hear the group, excellent player, and I think we're going to be up with him in the fall.
So this is Garrett Allman?
Yes, Garrett Allman is the conductor of the Jacksonville Symphony, and he and I have been great friends over the years. And so he was the one that actually, I believe, asked us to do this performance on Friday night.
Yeah, so I'll remind people that I'm talking with Carol Beth True, who is the pianist of the Two Times True Trio, the other True being David, her son, on the drums, and then Glenn Smith on the bass. They'll be playing at Illinois College in Jacksonville Friday night at 7:30 as part of the third annual Engelbach Heart Music Festival. And she's my guest this portion of Live and Local. Let's hear another cut from Two Times True. This is a tune called, well, you'll recognize it eventually. It's called Time After Time. It's called Time After Time with Two Times True, Carol Beth True piano, Glenn Smith electric bass. And actually, I guess, Carol Beth, that particular tune was a different drummer, wasn't it?
It was, a wonderful Kevin Giannino, who was David's mentor all through his high school years. So, yeah, let's definitely give that credit. That's Kevin.
Yeah, Carol Beth and company will be at Illinois College Friday night for a concert. And talking a little bit about, you know, your playing both classical and jazz piano. And I'm also very curious about something that shows up in your biography here about coordinating a couple of harmonica festivals.
More than a couple. We did a lot of that for a number of years. Yeah, I was kind of acted as the music director. It wasn't an official title, but that's what I was on a number of the National Harmonica Festivals. They have a major festival every year in some city where they bring in players, top players from all over the world. And then many cities have local ones, too. This, too, is dwindling because younger people are not taking up the instrument. And there are great players that have come up in recent years that are young, but it's the minority. So those festivals are definitely becoming minimal. But I had a lot of fun doing those because the people couldn't have been nicer. And I got to work with some really amazing players. And I was even on one where I didn't play with him, but I was right in the same room with Toots Tillman. So lots of great players and lots of work in that area for a number of years. So,
Does this imply that you play harmonica?
No, it implies I played the piano and coordinated the rhythm section that backed the harmonica people. Yeah, so that's what we did. We do a number of different shows like that where we are kind of the musical coordinating trio. We have the TAP Festival coming up here again in St. Louis on July 27th, and David and Glenn and I will be the backing trio. And we build the show with some top stars that are brought in from, you know, that are national stars, and then they have a lot of local groups of tappers. And we've just sort of learned how to help put these shows together really quick because there isn't usually a whole lot of time.
So that's tap as in tap dance?
Tap dancing, yes. Uh-huh. So that would be a similar thing to the harmonica festival where we build it in just a couple of days. This is all done in one day. It's all done with a Saturday rehearsal and the show at night. But, those harmonica festivals have been really fun. And that all came about through another very well-known musician here in St. Louis and one of my dearest friends, Sandy Weltman. And Sandy is a player not only the harmonica, but the banjo and percussion. And Sandy is a totally homeschooled musician, I guess you'd say. And he is just an incredible musician and a wonderful friend.
Does it require any sort of specialization as a pianist or as a trio for that matter, to back a harmonica player or to back tap dancers?
It requires a real sensitivity to whatever it is. And I feel like I've become a good accompanist over the years. I think it's one of them. And I like accompanying. I believe you have to like it because you have to think of yourself as helping to put that person or group out there. It isn't about you. So I think that that's one of the reasons we get the call. And then patience is huge. And the ability to pull up a lot of different styles quickly, that's always been the case with all of these things. Because on those harmonica festivals, I would have to do sometimes some like a Mozart clarinet concerto that somebody played on the harmonica or something like that, and all the way to the real hardcore funk because some of the younger players are into that. So those things really put you to the test.
You said patience is required. Patience for
real
what?
Patience. Patience because lots of times people either don't really know what they want to do or maybe they're a little too over the top with trying to tell you what to do. So it just depends. Most of them are real nice, but sometimes you'll get one that it kind of tries your patience. And so you have to be totally calm because you have to get it together. And it's no time for egos and it's no time for tempers flaring. And I think we've always been able to handle that pretty well.
And is that referring to both harmonica soloists and tap soloists?
Oh, anybody, yeah, because we've done a lot of other shows of that same nature. And, yeah, I mean, that's just human nature. Lots of times people really come into those things and don't know exactly what they want to do. Some come in with charts and know exactly what they want to do. So you deal with every possible degree of preparation and confidence. Some people, especially some of the more rookie performers, are lacking in confidence, so that's our job, is to help build that up and, like I say, put them out there in the best possible light. And that's how we approach it. And I think they usually like it. They usually treat us just wonderfully. So. I think it's worked out that way.
You can hear Carol Beth True in the best possible light with her trio at Illinois College in Jacksonville tonight at 7:30. It's the second concert of the third annual Engelbach Heart Music Festival that actually began last night and continues on Sunday with a concert by classical pianist Ian Hobson, which is also going to be at 7:30 there at Rammelkamp Chapel on the Illinois College campus. Here are Two Times True in a tune called Simple Samba. That's Two Times True in a tune called Simple Samba here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's musical heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring the new exhibit, The James Bond theme, Music to Live, Die, and Love Another Day. More information is at SousaArchives.org. We also have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium in Urbana. The Corkscrew's Bouvon Wine Bar features live music this weekend. Friday night from 6 to 8, it's Michael Fenoglio, and from 8:30 to 11 with Cody Sokolsky. On Saturday, it's the traditional jazz orchestra from 7 to 9, and John Coppice and Martin Stromberg from 10 to midnight. Details are on the Corkscrew's Facebook page. Blues guitarist and singer Duke Robillard's going to be at the Cowboy Monkey in Champaign tomorrow night at 9:30. We'll have a chat with him in a matter of minutes. That's a tune called Bradford Boogie from the 2010 release Passport to the Blues by blues guitarist and singer Duke Robillard, and heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. He's coming to Champaign for a gig tomorrow night, 9:30 at the Cowboy Monkey in the downtown area, and we're actually catching him as he's on a tour bus. Thanks very much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
Where are you traveling from and to at the moment?
We're traveling from Cleveland to Chicago today.
And this is, so those are two plus ours, three out of about how many gigs a year these days?
A year?
Yeah.
It varies greatly. It's as many as we can do.
Well, I read somewhere that for somebody who's been doing this for five decades or so, it's a sort of remarkable number of dates that you're on the road. And
yeah.
I don't want to ask the trite question, what keeps you doing it? But what's the attraction of the road? You know, when you could probably spend a lot of time doing this stuff.
You know, I love playing music, and I love it when I get to a town and there's an audience there that actually knows the songs and is looking forward to hearing, you know, different material from my repertoire, my career. And I don't know, it just makes it worth it to play it for them live. Being on the road is not my favorite thing, but once I get out here and I'm doing it and I'm playing for the audiences, then I love it, you know.
Do you usually have with you a fairly large band, or does that depend a lot on the venue?
And we're a four-piece band.
Oh, four-piece band.
Yeah.
Current
keyboards, bass, drums, and guitar.
Oh, so that's actually fairly intimate, I guess.
Yes, it is.
Including for a venue such as Cowboy Monkey, which is not a really big place, but it's certainly a fun place. And you like to get people dancing at these shows.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, as long as they're enjoying it, if they're a dance crowd, we're a good band for a dancing audience. If they just, we play a lot of venues that are, you know, tables and people eat and listen, and that's cool too. This music works for either situation, actually.
Well, and this is maybe just a shortcoming on my part or a misperception on my part, that for some reason I don't always think of the blues as dance music, and I wonder if that's just indeed a misperception, or does it depend the take that one has on the performance of it to make it danceable?
Well, you know, I play a lot of different styles of blues, and jump blues is one that I'm really known for, and jump blues is very great for dancing, you know. But we do a lot of different styles, and you know, from swing to funky to kind of roots rock and roll and jump blues, Chicago blues, and they all really work well for a dancing audience.
What particularly characterizes jump blues versus other types?
Kind of a swing feel, up tempo, kind of like a happy sound, basically. I mean, jump blues is usually very oftentimes the lyrics are about having fun, you know, about drinking, dancing, whatever. I mean, it can be about anything, you know, but there's usually a kind of an upbeat kind of feel to the idea of the tune.
Would the tune called Jump the Blues for you be an example of that?
That would be. That would absolutely be a good example of that.
This comes off your CD called World Full of Blues in 2007. Before we play it, I just wanted to mention to listeners that it seems so remarkable that since the mid-80s or so, you've released about 20 solo albums plus your various collaborations.
It's closer to 30.
Is it by now?
Yeah, it's like 29 or 30, I believe. I think.
So you must spend...
I've lost count, but people tell me it's that many.
Well, I actually was going to count up from there. There's a nice list on the Wikipedia entry, and I was going to count them up, but I actually lost count myself with the intention of doing it. And that, you know, that seems like you must spend an extraordinary amount of time in the recording studio as well as on the road.
I do. We usually make at least one album every year as a group, and then we also back up. I produce a lot of artists, and we back up a lot of different people. So we usually average 2 to 4 albums a year between us and other artists that we're playing with.
Well, maybe I'll ask you about that collaborative aspect in a minute, but here's Jump the Blues for you. It's Duke Robillard and his band. They're going to be at the Cowboy Monkey in Champaign for a gig tomorrow night at 9:30, and we're chatting with him here on Live and Local. Tune called Jump the Blues for you, Duke Robillard, the guitarist, and heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. He'll be in Champaign tomorrow night. You mentioned, in addition to the gigs and the recordings that you do band alone, that you do a fair amount of backing other artists, and kind of curious about the difference in the role when you shift from leading your own group to backing somebody else who's a soloist or the lead?
Well, very often there's two different ways that I do it. Sometimes I'm playing live with the artist, with the band in the studio, and sometimes I'm just in the control room producing and then later put on my guitar track. So it's totally different because it's always a different kind of music or, you know, different style than what I do with my own thing. The role that I have is, you know, varies quite a bit producing other artists because sometimes they need help with material, sometimes they need help with arrangements, sometimes... you know, it's more or less just picking the right performance and then adding my sound to it and then mixing it, seeing the thing through to the final mastering of it, and making sure it's all coming out right, you know.
In making your own records, do they typically have a concept for each album? They certainly have a title. Which I imagine may or may not reflect.
Concepts, and some of them I don't. Sometimes I start a record and I don't know what exactly the focus is exactly because I may have some varied material, and it usually comes to fruition as I'm recording it. We kind of start leaning a certain way towards what's what seems to be working the best, you know. So it that varies too. It's all, there's a lot of variables in recording from my point of view.
Well, for example, I opened up with this Bradford Boogie, which is one of the later tracks on your CD called Passport to the Blues, and
yeah.
Wondered what was the concept for that particular record.
Well, see, that's just a duo. So it was my drummer and I just wanting to do something that was reminiscent of Lightnin' Hopkins' recordings, where he would play with just the drummer and do a guitar boogie that would, something that would please my guitar fans that you know, want to hear me play some blues guitar. So it's a nice little boogie track. And, you know, just is not full band, so it's a different take on what I do.
But then the context, within the context of the larger theme of that particular CD?
Well, it was almost like an afterthought in a way. Something I just wanted to try, and it came out good, so we just put it on the album, and it actually got quite a bit of airplay. So you never know what people are going to go for. It's just impossible to tell.
Well, certainly, I went for it. It's certainly a fun tune. And you have, I'm not a guitarist, and I don't know guitar terms for different types of sounds and effects, but to me it had sort of a dirty sound to it. A lot of stuff in the sound. And I sort of wondered how you decide what guitar to use, what effects to use, according to the tune.
Oh, it's definitely according to the tune. And sometimes, you know, I can play a lot of different styles on one instrument, but in the studio you have the option to play, you know, whatever instruments you own, so you can, you know, use ones that are the most appropriate for each style, which is, you know, what I do when I'm recording. You know, usually use a variety of instruments.
Well, for example, here's a tune called Frankie and Johnny from the album 2009, Stomp the Blues Tonight. And I don't recall now what the particular sound was in the guitar for that one. Do you?
Well, it's actually a really dirty sound. It's I'm playing a 1952 Epiphone guitar and through a very small amp cranked up. And the idea was to replicate the sound of one of my favorite guitarists, Tiny Grimes, who was a jazz and blues guitarist who made some rhythm and blues recordings in the 50s, and that's where I got that particular idea for the arrangement of that song. And and that also has saxophone on it, so it's you know, different than the other one.
Yeah, I liked the
piano, and
that particular CD has a lot of horns through it, doesn't it?
Yes, a lot of them do have a lot of horns. Yeah.
When you mentioned that that tune is sort of inspired by a favorite guitarist of yours, and so many guitarists list you as among their influences and favorite guitarists, but do you often pay tribute to some of your idols?
I do that very often because I feel that I should give credit where it's due, and also I'm very seriously into the history of all the music that I play. So, and I teach too. In fact, I even teach online. You know, I always tell people about different artists guitarists they should check out and kind of go back and trace the history of certain styles and sounds, you know, because certain styles may start off with one person early on and then kind of be transformed as time goes on through other artists picking up on what they did. So I'm a big believer in going back to the original source and listening to everything that went after it. So, yes, I do. I have an album dedicated to T-Bone Walker where the entire album is T-Bone Walker material. And I have a song on Guitar Groove-A-Rama called Blues-A-Rama where I talk about 10 of my different guitar influences and play their styles and change keys for every one as I go.
During the course of the song.
Along in the song.
Yeah. Well, let's give a listen to this one. Frankie and Johnny from Stomp the Blues tonight. Duke Robillard here on Live and Local. Called Frankie and Johnny with Duke Robillard and his expanded band for this one. He's got the rhythm section plus horns on this particular album from called Stomp the Blues tonight. He's my guest this portion of Live and Local, and he'll be in Champaign tomorrow night at 9:30. And you mentioned just before we played that you're particularly a student of the history of the blues and of blues guitars, and not having been to any of your shows to date, I'm curious if you ever talk about that during a show.
I do. Yeah, I do occasionally, especially if it's a listening, sitting audience. I may talk a little bit about a few of the different artists that I do songs by and do dedications to them.
And do you make the judgment of the audience when you get there, or do you have some idea before you show up?
I do my shows off the cuff pretty much every night. If I plan something out exact, I'm not going to do it anyway, so I give up planning it. You know, I have a few songs that I like to start my set with to warm up. Then after that, it just goes in whatever direction that, you know, I feel appropriate for the crowd or that I feel like playing or maybe the condition of my hands that day, you know.
And when you do your online teaching, how do you go about that? And how would somebody who wants to get some lessons from Duke Robillard go about doing it?
Well, I work for a company called Sonic Junction. If you look up Sonic/Junction .com, you'll find it. And there are, at this point, three different artists that teach, all teaching blues. And I teach blues and swing-style guitar. And you can just sign up, and I have a lesson per week. Usually 4 weeks make up an entire song, and you know, it's something that we've had great response to. We have students in 6 continents and 22 countries that are enrolled in my lessons now.
So
I just film them at home, and through the magic of the internet, send them to the company, and they edit them and get them prepared for lessons online every week.
And do you also do any face to face teaching at home?
Face to face teaching.
Yeah,
I have quite a bit, but I don't now because I just don't have time.
It doesn't sound like you could possibly.
Yeah.
With everything else. Well, it's been a pleasure to just have a few minutes with you to share some of what you're doing with our audience. And since you mentioned swing and jazzy playing a couple of times, I thought we'd go out with a tune that, at least to my ear, is a little more of the swinging variety. It's called Sunday Morning. You mentioned the album earlier, Guitar Groove-A-Rama from 2006.
Yeah.
Is that how you'd characterize that this particular style?
Yeah, that'd be swing jazz, yeah.
And it's certainly a lot of fun to listen to it, and I'm sure people will have fun hearing you on Saturday night, 9:30, Cowboy Monkey, downtown Champaign. Check out their website for obtaining tickets. I'm not sure if tickets are necessary in advance, but you can find out. Duke Robillard, thank you very much for joining us here on Live and Local.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And our programs on FM 90.9 today are made possible by the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, presenting Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors and Macbeth, plus Failure, a Love Story by Philip Dawkins, from July 6th through August 10th at Ewing Manor in Bloomington. Ticket information is available at thefestival.org or 309-438-2535. This is 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and more for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.